Welcome to the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast, where educators go to find inspiration and learn world-class strategies from top leaders across the globe. Better Leaders, Better Schools was created by Danny Sunshine Bauer.
This is a bonus episode with author Mike Roberts from Hacking Classroom Management. Hi there, my name is Danny Sunshine Bauer. I'm a former classroom teacher and school administrator turned life and leadership coach. I'm also the host of this podcast where each week I share my conversation with top leaders from across the globe to help you accelerate your leadership development. In today's show with Mike Roberts, we explore a number of interesting topics like give it a shot. If you keep doing what works, you'll never get better. The 5-15-5 classroom format, person-to-person connection, not teacher-to-student, and hacking classroom management. Today's podcast upgrade is 7 experiments you can run in the classroom to give it a shot. You can download that at betterleadersbetterschools.com/Mike-Roberts or click the podcast upgrade link in the show notes page. Thanks for spending some time with me listening to this podcast. I hope you enjoy the show. But before we jump into the episode, I'd like to take some time to thank our show sponsors. I'd like to share an amazing free resource for all listeners of the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast. It's the Top 10 School Fundraising Ideas for 2017. And that's available at schoolzonepodcast.com. And just like the title says, you get the Top 10 School Fundraising Ideas for 2017 at schoolzonepodcast.com. Well, hey there, Better Leaders. I am joined today by Mike Roberts, who has taught middle school English for nearly 20 years. In that time, he has received numerous awards for his outstanding teaching, including being named the 2014 Utah English Teacher of the Year. Mike's most recent book, Hacking Classroom Management, 10 Ideas to Help You Become the Type of Teacher They Make Movies About, identifies a variety of strategies that empower students in the learning process. Additionally, he is the co-author of The New Science Teacher's Handbook, What You Didn't Learn from Student Teaching, and was a featured columnist in English Journal. Michael also teaches college classes focused on classroom management and literacy in the content areas. He's served on many educational committees and has been a featured speaker at dozens of state, regional, and national conferences. When he's not teaching or presenting, Mike can usually be found running ultra marathons, it's a little bit farther than the marathons I run, in the mountains. And even after all these years, he's still not sure which takes more energy, a week with 8th graders or a 100-mile race. Welcome to the show, Mike.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Ultra freaking marathon. So yeah, I have some friends that do that. I don't know if you're familiar with the Comrades in South Africa.
Yeah. It's on my bucket list one of these days.
So we got to start here. I mean, because you're weird and crazy if you do ultra marathons. I'm sure you'd agree. Well, how did you get started in that, buddy?
I was overweight back in the day and, trying to figure out what to do with my life. And I decided I'm going to just go for a run. And my first plan was I wanted to run from my house down to the local high school, run a mile on the track and run back. And it's going to be about a mile and a half. And I had never run before. You know, I mean, I played sports in high school and growing up, but never a continual. I wasn't a track runner or a cross country runner. So I was 33 at the time, and I still played some weekend basketball. So I put on my basketball shorts, put on my high tops, and started running down the street to the high school. And I didn't know how to run. I thought running was you run as fast as you can until you run out of gas, and then you're done. So I start running down the street, and I make it to the high school. So I had gone about, an eighth of a mile, basically, and I was exhausted. So I turned around and walked home and kind of sat and thought, and I'm like, okay, well, let's do this again. So the next day I tried it, slowed it down. And then that just kind of led to, kind of jogging every day. And then there were some people here at where I work, and they were going to take part in a half marathon. And I thought, holy cow, how would I ever do that? And they told me about this one that was a few months out, and they were all going. So I started training for that. So, I did that, had a great experience. And then things just start happening. It goes from half marathon to marathon to marathon to 50K. 50K goes to a 50-miler. 50-miler goes to 100K. 100K goes to 100-miler. And then there's been adventure runs. A few years back, my school. I work at an independent school in Salt Lake, and we're looking to raise some funds for a new campus. And I decided to do a fundraiser where I was going to run from my school in Salt Lake City to Las Vegas, Nevada for my 40th birthday. Mm. So it's about 475 miles. So yeah, that was my biggest running adventure. Is over 14 days, I did about 35 miles a day, and I ran from Salt Lake to Las Vegas. The best part was it was in July. So there were times where I'd start running at like 4 a.m. and it would already be 90 degrees. And so I'd finish and it would be, you know, 115 degrees out there. So that was a cool way to tie in the ultra running with, you know, with my school community and things like that. But yeah, I just love it. It's just a nice way to escape. And after, you know, 9 months in the classroom with a bunch of kids and a bunch of high energy, it's nice to go run up in the mountains for 5 or 6 hours and just be in silence.
Good for you. That's, you know, ultra runners are definitely my heroes. I've trained for 3 marathons. I completed 2. I got hurt right before my 3rd. Did a half marathon last year in Galveston, Texas. So I enjoy running.
Yeah.
The ultras scare the heck out of me. So, you know, I want to do that or triathlons. I haven't been able to get over the fear of that yet.
The big thing to know about ultras is, you know, half marathons and marathons, you try to run fast. Ultra marathons, you don't have to run fast. You just have to run all day. Mm-hmm. And so it's really nice to just kind of slow it down. And yeah, it's great. I really encourage you to try it.
That's cool. My only pace is slow, so I should be able to knock that out then.
There you go. That's nice.
So we're going to get more we'll get in the book and education, that kind of stuff. But I'm really intrigued by this running. So the last running question I'll ask, you know, did you learn anything preparing for these ultras that helped you become a better educator?
Oh, absolutely. The biggest thing is, I mean, when I go out on these runs, that's where I get my best teaching ideas. And I know, you know, there's all kinds of science that talks about movement and how it fires your brain up. And yeah, when you're out there by yourself, just running and nothing else is really, you know, going through your brain, you just come up with these cool ideas. And that's really helped me in the classroom, because a lot of those ideas haven't worked. And that's one thing that I've really learned through teaching is you got to give it a shot. If you keep doing what works, you're never going to get better. And that's one thing I always strive for is, yeah, this works, but is there something else that might work better? And in trying that, you know, sometimes it works out and sometimes it doesn't. But you have to be willing to give it a shot. And that's one of the things that running has really taught me is there are going to be days when you go out running and it feels great. And those days you have in the classroom as well, where everything's just clicking and every kid, even that kid who never participates, he's digging it. But then there are those days where you go running and it's hard and you struggle and you don't want to be there and it's challenging. And you have those days in the classroom too, where you think you have this great lesson plan, you know, set up, and then it just bombs. And even those kids who are always with you, they're not really with you that day. So I think there's a lot of parallels between running and teaching, for sure.
And I want to restate that, you know, for the listeners, this idea of giving it a shot is so underutilized and undervalued by school leaders. We get so comfortable with tradition. You know, it's like that blanket we never got rid of from, you know, our toddler years. And we're comfortable and, you know, it protects us and all this stuff. But here's the thing, like, give it a shot. If you keep doing what works, you're never going to get better. You're going to stay stagnant, right? So there's all these opportunities out there for us, whether we create them or we can join them. And it's like, what's the worst thing that could happen? Even if you fail, right? To be quite honest, this has been a challenging year for Miriam and I living in Belgium. Personally, we're doing awesome. It's great. So nobody has to worry about that. But professionally, there's been some challenges specifically for her. But guess what? We've learned a lot, you know? So it's not a failure. We've learned so much about what we want to do professionally, and that'll help us make even better decisions in the future. So give it a shot.
Yeah, there's a part of the book. I tell a story in the book about I had this acid wash jacket in 9th grade that I loved.
Yes.
And everywhere I went in like 9th and 10th grade, I was rocking my acid wash jacket. And then I outgrew it. But I was so attached to it that I kept it. And so I didn't get rid of my acid wash jacket until probably right before I went to college. So this is a jacket I hadn't worn for years, but I was so attached to it and some of the ideas of what it represented that I didn't let go of it. And I think a lot of schools do that. We get that system that, well, this has always worked for us, and we hang on to it because, well, it worked, you know, back when I was in ninth grade, this was it. Well, I'm not in ninth grade anymore. Things have moved on, but I'm still hanging on to that. And in my college classes that I teach, that's one thing I talk to the students about is, yeah, you may have that system that works. Try something else. Worst case scenario, you go back to your system that works. Best case scenario, though, you find a new system that works even better. And to me, that's worth a gamble. It's worth taking that shot to make your school and your classroom a better place.
Yeah, maybe it's not that you adopt the whole system, but there's this part of the system that will make mine even better. So there's so many ways to improve. You know, I love – this is such a beautiful way of looking at trying new things. And the acid wash jacket's a funny story too. I have a t-shirt my mom gave me, 1983 Chicago White Sox winning ugly. If I wear it, you literally can see my chest underneath it, but it wasn't originally a see-through shirt. So I have an acid wash jacket that's currently in my shelf too. It's just a t-shirt. So that's so funny. I don't know about you, but I had enough on my plate just thinking about how to operate a building and how to develop my people. That was enough. And that doesn't even include parents. That doesn't even include student issues. And it definitely doesn't include where am I going to find the funding to run all the great programs my students deserve. Well, the great news is I have an amazing free resource for you, the top 10 school fundraising ideas for 2017. That's available at schoolzonepodcast.com. In this guide, you will be exposed to the best fundraising ideas for schools in 2017. And my favorite company that's described in the guide is School Spirit Vending. The reason School Spirit Vending rises above the rest is because they make fundraising so incredibly hassle-free. What if a company would come in, install vending machines with customized stickers. That's right, stickers that had your logo, that had your mascot, that had whatever you and your students wanted installed. They come in, they take care of the machines. You do no work besides having the machines installed in the school, and you get a cut of the profit. That's where you're going to find money to actually run these programs. So check out the top 10 school fundraising ideas for 2017 at schoolzonepodcast.com and definitely give School Spirit Vending a call. Tell them Danny Sunshine sent you. Mike, I'm really interested in routines and rituals and what helps people sort of get in the zone and have a successful day. Do you have anything that you might do the night before, the morning of, on your way to work that helps you have a successful day?
Well, yeah, I don't know if it helps me have a successful day, but I'm very much a creature of habit. I'm that guy who lays out his clothes the night before every day. So every night before, you know, I'm going to work, I lay out my clothes and know what I'm doing. And then in the shower, in the classroom, beginning of the year, I lay out all my unit plans day by day. And so I have an idea of what I'm doing in class from day one to the end of the school year, as soon as we walk in. Now there is the flexibility in there, obviously. So I don't come up with, you know, specific things. I do that more on the fly. And that's what I do in the shower. So I'm like, okay, here's what we're going to be covering today. What are some ideas here? What are some ways I could tweak what I've done in the past? What direction are the students taking things right now that I can really plug into? So in the shower, that's where I really solidify my plan for the day. And then in my classroom, I like to get to school early and touch base with a lot of students in the hallway and just see how their, you know, night was, how the homework's going, all that kind of stuff. And then in class, I follow a pretty traditional, I call it a 5-15-15-15-5 format. You warm up with the first 5 minutes, you do three little mini lessons with the 15-minute chunks in the middle, and then you cool down with the 5-minute chunk in the end. And how each of those plays out is different. We don't do the same warm up every day. We don't do the same cool down. The activities are all different. But my students have kind of gotten used to that, where they know if we're doing something in class and they might not be digging it, well, they'll hang in there because they know it's only going to be 10 or 15 minutes, and then we're moving on to the next activity. So I think the more routines you can set up, it really does help with that classroom management, because if my students don't know the time frame there, well, maybe we're 10 minutes in and they think we're going to be doing this for 40 minutes. Well, they're going to start losing interest and they're going to start messing around and causing problems. But if they know, well, I just got to focus for 5 more minutes. And I will say that as a teacher, I'm like, all right, guys, we got 5 more minutes on this. Let's really, you know, finish up strong here. I think that does help with the engagement. And so much of classroom management happens in kind of those down times, that if you can eliminate those down times, I really think it just keeps the class running a lot more smoothly and effectively.
Mike, do you unplug from work? And if so, how do you do that? And if you don't unplug, what's the challenge there?
Yeah, I don't unplug from work. You know, I'm constantly checking emails. I'm constantly reading new articles. You know, I'm a coach. I teach my classes. I teach my college classes. So I'm always in that realm of teaching. I guess the closest I get to unplugging is when I go out running. But unfortunately, a lot of times when I'm out running, I'll put in a teaching podcast or something like that. So I'm even getting it there. So yeah, I that is one thing I could work on, is unplugging more. But to me, that helps me become a better teacher, is because I'm teaching, you know, different grade levels or different ages, learning about different subjects, hearing different perspectives. And yeah, I just love teaching. I really do. So I don't look at me not unplugging as being a problem. But it is something I could probably cut back on a little bit.
What would a perfect day at school look like for you?
Ooh, that's a great question. Perfect day at school.
It's a new question too, by the way. You're the first person I ever asked.
That's good. All right. Well, here we go. So I'm getting here, you know, about a half hour early. I'm a big fan of getting here early and setting everything up and make sure everything is squared away. Anything I need on the board, any videos I'm pulling up, I it's all laid out. I think that, again, is a huge part of classroom management, is teachers saying, well, let me just take a minute to write this on the board. Man, you give a seventh grade classroom a minute to mess around, and yeah, I mean, it's zombie apocalypse happening in your classroom. So a perfect day for me would be there on time, setting up my classroom. Everything's good to go. I'm out in the hall. I'm talking with kids. You know, we're engaging as people before they get to my classroom. And I think this is something that, you know, whether it's a student with a teacher or an administrator with a teacher, I think a lot of times we look at it like that, like student teacher, administrative teacher, rather than just person to person. So I like to connect with my students as people well before they get into my classroom. So we're talking in the hall, just, you know, how was the game last night, things like that. Then we get to class, and it's one of those things where the conversation just flows, and we're talking about, you know, books, and we're talking about life, and every kid's participating and every kid's engaged. At some point during the day, I mean, if it's a perfect day, we're going on a field trip or we have a guest speaker. I think the more you can bring in some outside perspectives, again, either, you know, as an administrator, it's great that, you know, you want to run faculty meeting all the time, but it's even cooler when you get someone else to come in and share those ideas. Same thing as a teacher. I like to think my students love seeing me up there every day talking and engaging with them, but I also realize they love variety too. So let's get someone else in there. And then we end the day by, you know, just saying final goodbyes and off we go. I'm sure there was a good lunch somewhere in there, but just adding some variety and adding fun. I think that's one thing that schools struggle with nowadays, is because of, you know, standardized test scores and because of curriculums and all that. I think fun is slowly being taken away from schools. And it's become, you know, when I was growing up, you weren't allowed to say the F word in class. And now I think fun has become the other F word, that you're not allowed to, you know, you're not allowed to have fun in class. So it's become kind of this forbidden thing and looked down upon. And I think a huge part of creating a positive classroom environment or positive school environment is that element of fun. It should be a place where people want to go, whether it's students into a classroom or teachers into work. It should be a place they're excited to get every day, because it's an enjoyable place, an exciting place to be.
So I want to share a quick story. I'm pulling up. I'm working on a book as well in terms of school leadership. You know, I don't know what the title is, but it's going to be released in 2018.
Nice.
Just hired an editor. So literally, you know, we're recording this January. This is going to be released in February. So this is real time, you know, talk between me and Mike. So within the next 6 months or so. But one of the things that I explored also is this idea of fun. And, you know, my whole concept was, listen, you know, they talk about Disney being the most magical place on earth, right? Mm-hmm. But the thing is like, if we have students who are just so freaking amazing and they come to us with all this energy and creativity today, why aren't schools the most magical place on earth? So one of the things that I did for this chapter was just come up with like 10 absolutely ridiculous things could do to be more magical, if you're following me. Yeah, and I learned this from a guy named James Altucher, who I really, really respect. And he has this practice mm-hmm. of just making lists, you know what I'm saying? Like every day, not evaluating how effective or how high quality the idea is, but just to create lists. And like you said, give it a shot. You know, even if 9 of those ideas suck, that one idea might change everything. You know?
Yeah.
And I might have shared this on the podcast before, and I just want to spend a minute more to actually read my list of 10 things, because I want to hear your reaction, and then we'll get back to the idea of fun, because I want to ask you, you know, what could we do? Here's my list of 10 ways to incorporate more play and magic into school, or this idea of fun. So number one, 10 to 15 minute recess after every freaking class. Number two, one morning class that infuses all the core subjects and arts into a single class. The afternoon is for playing, for independent projects and team building, or taking a nap. Number three, dress up like my new friend Andy Jacks. He frequently dresses as a banana or a gorilla to create a fun atmosphere for kids and staff. Number four, build some type of ride or game at your school for kids to play before and after school, during lunch and passing periods. Why not? Ryan Jackson and his students built an escape room. Number five, create one class called Play. Put one smart adult that will just resource kids, get out of the way, and play with students. Number six, add a bunch of live animals to the school that can roam the halls in classes. Let the kids take care of them. See what happens. Number seven, start every day with an all-school assembly and dance-off between students and staff. Every day. Number eight, protect the arts, clubs, and sports at your school. Number nine, when anyone, a kid or an adult, is taking themselves too seriously, throw a pie in their face. And number 10, create a nickname for every kid and staff member and use it lovingly. Plus the bonus idea, write a movie, play, musical, and give everybody in the school a part. Then film it and present it each year and start over. So that's sort of my 10 ways of making school more magical.
Yeah, I like all the ideas of empowering your students. That's a big part of, again, going back to the book, that's a big part of to me, what a successful school does. I think one of the things I talk about in my book is, you know, my book's kind of about the three E's: expectations, empowerment, and engagement. And all those things you just mentioned there do that. I have a saying, and I love you when you mentioned the playroom where you have a teacher in there and you just get out of the way. Mm-hmm. I think too often we set our rules and you know, we can't do this and you can't do that based off of a couple kids.
Right.
You know, 95% of the kids aren't going to have an issue in class, but that 5%, well, we need a seating chart. Or, you know, 95% of the kids aren't going to cheat, but those two are, so we need a, you know, I need to grade everything. I have a saying that I use, trust them until you bust them. And mm-hmm. I tell my students, mm-hmm. day one, I trust you. And we're going to do things that you might not be used to, where you're doing self-assessments and you're grading your own test in class. And until you break that, hey, man, I'm all in on you. And I think administrators could easily do this with teachers as well. I think a lot of times we set up these expectations for our teachers that are based for kind of the low bar. And it's like, well, what's the low bar? No, let's see what teachers can do and really raise that bar and say, yeah, I'm going to give you a whole bunch of freedom in how you teach and what you teach and you know, your engagement with the students. And then I'm a big believer, you give it, and then if they can't handle it, then you tone it back. Not we start low and then I gradually give it to you a little by little. I think you got to show them that you have that trust and confidence in them, whether it's a student or a teacher, and that's when you see them rise to the occasion.
This podcast is a proud member of the Education Podcast Network, podcasts for educators and podcasts by educators. Listen to all the great education podcasts at edupodcastnetwork.com. That's edupodcastnetwork.com. Yeah, and better leaders, you know, listeners of the show, expectations, so incredibly powerful. In the mastermind, we're right now reading The Happiness Advantage and how we could infuse more happiness and joy into the work. And guess what? It actually has very real results in the productivity and the quality of work that's produced by the people you employ. There was an interesting study, and I don't know if you've heard of this, Mike, but some researchers, it's called the Pygmalion effect, and they were looking at managers. And they thought that some managers, they try to motivate by extrinsic rewards like money, right? And then there's other managers that really try to influence people by getting at their intrinsic motivation and what really drives them and connecting that to their tasks. And the researchers wanted to see what the heck would happen when you take a X manager and connect him or her with a Y employee. So somebody who wants to motivate with money, but the other person's not motivated by money. They're motivated by their intrinsic, you know, motivation. And the crazy thing that they found was that when you take your manager who is motivating with money, guess what? The employees start getting motivated by money. And when you took a manager who wanted to motivate through intrinsic means, guess what? People started soul searching and found internally what, you know, drove them in their work. And it's all about expectations. So back to you in the classroom, if you make those rules for the five that consistently break it and you bring your expectations down to the lowest common denominator, that's what you get, right?
Yeah. I believe it was Sir Ken Robinson who said, the problem isn't we set our expectations too high and fail, it's we set them too low and succeed.
Exactly.
You know, it's... And to me, leadership isn't about doing that one big thing. Successful leadership and successful classroom management is about doing those 100 little things. And so you can wave that carrot. Yeah, you'll get a couple people diving for it. But what about, you know, all these little things that are going on and recognizing that? And people, from my experience, really appreciate the little stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, that one evaluation that a principal writes up for a teacher for the school year. Well, that's great. But for me personally, I'd rather have, you know, 20 little check-in points, 20 little, hey, awesome job on that lesson today. Hey, great job on that field trip I heard. I'd rather have small little baby steps along the way to let me know that I'm appreciated and doing the right thing than, you know, that one big one where it's like, yes, you're doing a great job. And I think students are the same thing. Little things like meeting them at the door, asking them how their day was, pulling them aside and saying thanks for – I mean, I'm a huge fan of every single day thanking your students as they leave the classroom.
Nice.
And I think, you know, school leaders, I get it. We're all busy, but can you find those moments? One of the chapters in the book is how we underutilize email. And I know some everyone's out there like, what are you talking about? I have, you know, 500 emails right waiting for me right now. I hear you. I think we underutilize it for the good things, though. It takes 2 minutes to say, hey, I really appreciate you doing this. And sending that email. And those 2 minutes, whether, again, for a teacher, it's sending it to a student or a parent, or as an administrator, sending it to a teacher. Those 2 minutes, man, I tell you what, you're going to get paid back tenfold in the long run because it does. It makes you want to continue to do that versus that once a year, you know, evaluation form that gets filled out or whatever you have going on at your school. The more you can do it on those little basis, or on a shorter basis, the more it's going to impact versus the one big thing that you do.
So, Mike, tell me the story of writing your new book.
Yeah. So, you know, when I was growing up, I had a lot of traditional teachers. And I think, you know, lots of schools still have those. We kind of teach how we were taught. And things are improving as far as, like, you know, we know about multiple intelligences and we know about the importance of group work and all that stuff. But the teachers that I really connected with were the ones who got to know me personally. And so I remember I had a fifth grade teacher named Miss Ibsen who would show up to our basketball games. And I had a middle school geography teacher named Miss Roberry, who would bring her husband in and he'd play guitar for us and we'd sing along to some songs. And it was that kind of stuff that really connected with me. So as I became a teacher, I fell into the trap that everyone does, and here's what a class looks like. And my class was very traditional. I did lots of lecturing. It was quiet. Students were very passive, where I'd give them information. And after a few years, I started realizing, wait a second, this is not what worked for me. So why did I fall into this? And like I said, schools are doing a good job of changing the way classes run, but there's still that expectation of, well, good classroom management means students are being very compliant and talking quietly and remaining seated. And for me, that just didn't work. So I started tweaking my class where it became an active class where students, I call it controlled movement, where I give them opportunities to stand up and move. And we, instead of having a lecture or a discussion in class, we'll go outside. We'll go walk around the perimeter of the school, and I'm asking questions of the students and they're discussing, and I'm, you know, checking in with students as we go. And as I started trying more and more of these ideas, I just kind of started jotting them down and seeing what worked and what didn't work. And then I started teaching some classes, either some PD classes to teachers or college classes to some pre-service teachers, and started sharing these ideas with them. And I saw them starting to try them and coming back with, oh my gosh, I did a walk and talk with my second grade class and it was awesome. And so after a few years of, you know, doing some PD and all these years of experimenting with, you know, within my own class and talking to other teachers, I decided, why not throw some of these ideas down into a book and see if we can kind of change what classroom management looks like. To me, it's not about maintaining, you know, the behavior in class. It's about forming relationships with those students so they know the expectations in class, but they know they can have fun and they know how to act appropriately. And, you know, challenging those troubled kids who cause some disruptions. I think a lot of times they cause disruptions because they're bored. So how do I make a better lesson plan that gets them involved in that? How do I engage them in the learning? How do I empower them in the learning? What say do they have? And this is where self-assessments come in and things like that, where they can reflect back to me. If a student writes me a paper, I grade it and hand it back to them. End of story. That's what you got. Versus a student who does a self-assessment is going to self-assess, and I have them write me up a summary of their thoughts and how they use their time and where they're going, their directions, and all that stuff. Then I get a better understanding of what was going on. And they give themselves a score, and then I read theirs, and I ultimately do have final say in their grade. But if I know where they're coming from and where they've been, generally speaking, our scores are in the same ballpark. More often than not, to be honest, kids are harder on themselves than I would be. But it puts them in the position of, okay, we are coming up with a grade here, not the teacher is coming up with the grade. So students will do some reviews, peer reviews, where they make comments. So you get the class involved in what your paper looks like. You do a self-assessment that gets you involved in what I think my paper looks like. You give it to the teacher, who then gives you the feedback on what they think the paper looks like. And suddenly it becomes, okay, here's what the class community thinks your grade is or your score is, versus here's what the teacher thinks. And the more you can get students and for administrators, teachers involved in the process, the more buy-in they have. And the more buy-in they have, to me, the more effective they are. And so, yeah, long story short, I wanted to try to share some of the ideas that I have seen work successfully in my class and in some other classes with teachers all over the country and hopefully all over the world.
I love that so much. And you know, it goes back to when I shared my list of 10 and you pulled out that idea of empowering, right? Empowering people, empowering students. And I hear the same thing by giving your students ownership as well. Since we have this theme of give it a shot, right, which might become the title of the podcast episode we're recording, I'm curious, you know, can you share just a spectacular experiment that failed and what you learned from it? And then conversely, what was an experiment that just was wildly successful as well?
All right. So the big one that failed wasn't really an experiment, but it was how I used to teach when I first got involved in teaching for the first several years. You know, to me, I was going to be the dispenser of knowledge and I was going to be up there and I was going to talk. And, you know, it was a very traditional structure. I teach eighth grade English and it was probably my third or fourth year of teaching, and I'm up doing my thing. I can't remember what I was lecturing about, babbling on, but I remember this kid put his head down on his desk, and me being a young snarky teacher, I walk over to him and I kind of tap his desk and I say, "Thomas, I'm sorry, am I boring you?" And Thomas, classic eighth grader, looks up at me and says, "Yeah, kinda," and then puts his head back down. And that moment I was like, whoa, this structure for me is not working at all. Because while Thomas may be the only kid who's putting his head down on the desk, I was like, how many kids in here want to put their heads down on their desk, but they're just too scared or too respectful or whatever? And, you know, I'm sure I had some snarky reference for Thomas and all that stuff. But that one thing, that one failure really made me think, okay, I gotta turn the tables here. And like I said, for the first 3 or 4 years, I was very traditional. And that was the first one where I was like, okay, maybe talking to my class or talking at my class for 20 or 30 minutes straight isn't the best approach. And that's when I kind of came up with, you know, the whole about every 10 or 15 minutes, we got to mix it up and we got to move and we got to, you know, like I said, I do a lot of controlled movement where we work with partners and then they get up and they have to find new partners, or they're doing some small group work and then they have to come up to the board and write something down. And to me, letting students get the wiggles out that way saves them from, you know, falling asleep, saves them from getting up and, you know, pushing their friends' books off. You got to let students have those opportunities to move. So yeah, Thomas falling asleep was a huge failure back in the day. A success I've had happened this week. I did what I call an independent learning project, and I gave students 8 or 9 books to choose from. I said, okay, you can pick 8 or 9 books. And I gave a book talk on each one. And I said, you pick the book you want, and then your project, because that's always our big concern, is like, well, okay, what's the final project? Is there a test on this? You know, they want that final assessment. And I said, do something that impresses me. And they said, well, what does that mean? I said, that's what you have to figure out. I said, I don't know what impresses me until I see it. And so it was a super cool for 2 weeks. These kids were working in groups or individually, and I just kind of check in. And they laid out the whole process. They showed me, here's our syllabus for, here's our nightly reading, here's our project that we're going to do, here's our learning outcomes that we're getting out of this. And they did this whole thing. And I mean, the project I saw with this one just overwhelmed anything I could have suggested to them. I had a couple of kids create podcasts, oddly enough. I know. I had some kids do movie trailers. I had one kid who he read Old Man in the Sea was one of the options. So he read it and he was really struggling with, well, what kind of project do I come up with for this? And I said, well, think about it. What are some themes? And he said, well, perseverance is a big one. And after you fail, going back out and trying and trying. I said, okay, well, see what you can come up with that. So he comes up to me the next day and he says, I have an idea, but I don't think you're going to like it. I said, well, what's the idea? And he said, there's this video game that he plays. Oh, it's I'm forgetting the name of it right now, but it's very much Hunger Games-esque.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so he's battling it out with 100 other people online. And he said, Mr. Roberts, I have never won at this game, and it frustrates me, and I do everything I should. He said, I want to talk about my experience of that. And I said, well, how are you going to do that? And he walked me through the whole process. And, you know, after a week of playing, he never won. And he said, you know, originally I was just going to write you up something of, you know, here's my thoughts of, here's how I felt at the end of that session. And here's, you know, why I continue to play. But then he said, you know, I want to do something else. So he created a video that went through and it showed all of his, when his game ended, when he was killed in the process. So he showed all of his deaths. Yeah. And then he'd give like a little monologue about, oh, I was so close on this one. Or it was super cool to see him take something that he was passionate about and apply it to the learning and then come up with an idea, but then extend the idea even farther than I thought. So it went from, I'm going to write this down to, oh, I'll create this video, to then I'm going to create this audio monologue about it, and just giving them those chances. I mean, other projects, some kids went around, they read The Absolutely True Diary of a Part-Time Indian by Sherman Alexie, for any of your listeners who know that book. And one of the big themes is poverty. So these kids wanted to help with, you know, kids struggling in poverty. So they went out, reached out to the local Boys and Girls Club and said, what are some things you need? And they said, we really need athletic shoes. So these kids went out in their neighborhood, knocking on the doors, came up with a little spiel that they'd give everybody. We're trying to raise money for this English project. We're going to do this. They ended up raising, I think they said, $800. And they ended up going out buying 10 pairs of shoes for the local Boys and Girls Club. And I said, wow, how long did that take you? And there were two of them in this group. And both of them went out on their own time for this project individually and spent over 4 hours trying to raise money. And to me, again, you just gotta give it a shot. You just gotta let them try it. And it's scary. That's the scariest part for either an administrator or a teacher, is to give up some of that power. Because once you give up that power, you don't know what's going to happen. Hmm. And I think that's why so many teachers lecture, because you control the conversation. And when you give that up, either as a principal letting teachers do something in their classroom, or as a teacher letting students kind of take the rein, it can be super scary. But that's the downside. The upside is, man, what the possibilities are will blow you away. And that's what a lot of, you know, going back to the book, that's what a lot of the ideas presented in the book are about. I think I'm just encouraging teachers and asking teachers to try some of these ideas and see what happens if you don't have a seating chart. And if you do let kids grade their own test, and if you do let them do a take-home test. I mean, there's so many things that I think can be so much better if we're just willing to give up a little bit of that power.
Love it. And we're back on the idea of engagement and ownership again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But just, you know, that's such a beautiful example, and it's a leadership example too. So the listeners that are leading a school, leading a district, if you keep it real formal and traditional and hierarchical, you know, in terms of who reports to who and all this stuff, if you don't give away the power, right, you'll never get to experience the magic, right? Because those things that you've seen these kids, I mean, what kid goes home excited to just give up 4 hours of their, anybody, I mean, time is the most precious resource, right? And kids will be motivated sometimes by grades to put in a lot of work in terms of homework. But these people, you know, your kids wanted to solve a problem. So those 4 hours, I'm sure that they were probably even in a flow state, that it went by so fast. And then they couldn't wait to, you know, create a report and report back to class and share the results and try to tweak things and make it even better. That's because it became authentic for them. Yeah. And that's what we do in the classroom. But guess what? As leaders of a school, of a district, you can give away some of that power too, so that mm-hmm. folks can do something really special with the trust, right? And respect that you give. Yeah. Go ahead.
I think a lot of times, you know, teachers, a lot like students, kind of feel bound to, this is what I have to do because this is, you know, what I'm told I'm supposed to do, rather than, okay, what can I do versus what I have to do? And I think if you give some of that power over to your teachers, and, you know, you still have the expectations, you still have the parameters, obviously, but let them have some creativity in that. And again, let teachers have fun in what they're doing, because if you have a happy teacher and a happy classroom, you're going to have a happy school.
Yeah.
And that, I mean, honestly, you pick up that vibe in schools. There are some schools you walk into and it's just a very heavy feeling. And I think sometimes, not all the time, but sometimes that does stem from, you know, very top heavy administration saying, this is what you have to do. And it just kind of stifles the creativity of the teachers, which then stifles the creativity of the students. But then the opposite is also true. You let them have some freedom, man, kids are going to be psyched, teachers are going to be psyched, parents are going to come in, they're going to feel that, and the principal is going to reap the benefits of that.
Conferences, piles of flyers, getting stuck in endless email lists and never-ending calls, there's an easier way to sort through and identify the best school fundraisers. School Spirit Vending proudly presents the Top 10 School Fundraising Ideas of 2017. It's a guide of the top fundraising companies hand-picked from the best podcasts. As an added bonus, this guide lists 5 resource companies that would add tremendous value to your community, school, and students. The best part is that School Spirit Vending is giving the guide away completely free. Are you ready to simplify the search? Download the free guide at schoolzonepodcast.com. So Tony Robbins is famous for saying, quality questions create a quality life. Successful people ask better questions, and as a result, they get better answers. What is one question you should or you wish leaders would ask themselves more frequently?
That's a great question. Do my teachers enjoy coming to work every day? And then what could I do to help with that?
Awesome. I love that.
Yeah, I think it's too many of us think, oh my gosh, I just have to find that one thing. And it's not that one thing. It's all those little things. It's leading by example. You know, if you're asking your teachers to do something, then you need to be doing it as well. And if you're asking your teachers to try things and fail in their classroom, then you need to show them that you're trying and failing as an administrator and, you know, having fun and being in their classrooms. It just makes a huge difference. And not being in their classrooms to observe their teaching, being in their classrooms to be part of the classroom. And I think that really helps the teacher. I think that helps with student relationships with the principal. I think just being available to listen, to offer ideas, to be open to new ideas. And when a teacher comes to you and says, I want to try this, rather than trying to poke holes in it, embrace it and say, yeah, let's do it. And try to find ways to make it better. Yeah, I think that would make a big difference in just the overall mood and tone of a school. I mean, just make it a happy place. Why do you, when you were a teacher, what did you want in a school? Mm-hmm. And now as an administrator, how can you let your teachers do that? That's one thing I always try to do as a teacher is, okay, if I were an eighth grader, what would I want my teacher, what would I want to be learning right now? And what would I want my teacher to be doing? So to put it back onto you as a former teacher, you know, what would you as a teacher want your administration to do in this case?
It's awesome. I really appreciate how you answered that. And that's a newer question also to the podcast. So I think the answers are going to be absolutely fantastic. And 2 action steps for the Better Leaders listeners. One, I obviously want to work with you in the mastermind. And if I could be a part of your leadership journey and help you achieve your leadership goals, explore the mastermind and test me too. Test me in this, because if I don't deliver the results that I know will happen if you execute and join the mastermind, then I'm happy to give you back anything you invested financially. And that's betterleadersbetterschools.com/MM. But the other crazy coincidence, you know, Mike and I didn't discuss this ahead of time, but we are reading The Happiness Advantage in the mastermind currently. And so if you want an answer to the question Mike posed in terms of how to make it a place where your teachers, your staff are just running to get to work because they just love being there, The Happiness Advantage explores that a bit. And I'll link up that up for you in the show notes. And speaking of books, so Mike, let's wrap up this interview with just 2 more questions. Mm-hmm. The first one, what's a book you've read in the past handful of years that really impacted your leadership, your productivity, or quality of life? And why should the better leaders read it?
A couple that come to mind. Anything by Sir Ken Robinson, I'm a huge fan of, whether it's The Element or Creative Schools. I just like the way he writes about, you know, finding your passion and following your passion and you know, introducing students and letting them take their passion, a lot like that project that I did. Let them find their passion and let them show you what they can do with it rather than me kind of telling you, here's what you need to be doing. I really like his approach and his philosophies on education. Last summer, I read Malcolm Gladwell's Tipping Point. I also really like that because it kind of ties into the theme of this podcast. You never really know what's going to be that one thing that kind of is the tipping point. And if you're constantly doing the same thing over and over and over again, you're never going to find that one drop of water that finally pours everything over the top and really makes it into a big deal. So those would be 2 that are 2 or 3 that I've read recently that I just like the theories and the ideas behind finding your passion and finding what's next and how do you make it the next big thing.
Very cool. And listeners, you already know in the show notes, Hacking Classroom Management, The Happiness Advantage, The Element, The Tipping Point, all these resources we're sharing, they're all going to be linked up for you in the show notes. Mike, well done. We're here at the end. This is your last question. You're building a school from the ground up. You're not limited by any resources. Your only limitation is your imagination. So how would you build your dream school and what would be your top three priorities?
As far as the building itself, I don't know if I'd put a whole lot of money into that because I guess my top three priorities would be, you know, experiencing the world around. So we might not even be in school that often if I had a, you know, magic wand. But I'd have lots of electives. I'd have all kinds of cool electives that are student driven. You know, I think kids would love having a Harry Potter elective where they get to just talk about Harry Potter. I think lots of kids would love to have a life skills elective where you learn everything from, you know, replacing a tire to fixing a leaky roof to learning some plumbing to learning to sew. I think there are tons of kids who would love something like that. So you just have this wide range of elective courses and they're year-long courses. It's not like, oh, you do this for, you know, 3 or 4 weeks or a little unit of it. No, this is something that is part of the everyday school experience. A curriculum that allows for personalized learning would be my second one, where, yeah, the teacher has an idea here, but you let the kids run with it. And this is something I've been experimenting with, you know, just recently, like I mentioned earlier with some of the book choices that the kids did. And it is unbelievable the amount of engagement and excitement. And again, the classroom management, it was a non-issue for those 2 weeks. There was nothing that I had structured in that's like, oh, yes, let's make sure this, this, and this gets done. No, kids were involved. They were wanting to do this. And I think the more you could structure your curriculum, whether it's, you know, math, science, the arts, whatever you're teaching, figure out how could you do that in a way that the kids are playing a big, big part in. And the last one, like I said, my school building, I wouldn't put much into it, but I would put a lot into field trip money and things like that. I mean, this would kind of be magic school bus type thing. You get in the school bus and off you go. And, you know, if we're studying, you know, the Constitution, then let's take a week-long trip to Washington, D.C. and experience the government. And if we're, you know, talking about the court system, then, you know, let's take a daily field trip down to the local courthouse and see what's going on there. And if we're studying this author, let's see if we can, you know, go see them speak somewhere. You know, if they're out on a book tour and they're not coming to our town, how can we get out to see them somewhere? So, yeah, the big three, lots of electives. Curriculum that, you know, really focuses on personalized learning, and then weekly, daily field trips and guest speakers and things like that, that shows the kids, here's what it looks like, rather than me trying to explain to them what it is.
Well, Mike, thanks so much for being a part of the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast. Any parting words of advice, and what's the best way to get a hold of you?
Yeah, best way to get a hold of me, I am on Twitter. I am at Bald Roberts, BaldRoberts. You can email me just as easily. My email address is thebaldenglishteacher@gmail.com. And for any school leaders who are out there who are interested in the book, you know, if you buy a clump of books for your teachers or for your district or something like that, you know, you pick up 20 books or whatever, drop me an email, hit me up on Twitter, and I'm happy to do, you know, an hour-long free PD session for you to kind of walk your teachers through some of these ideas, because it can be scary to say, wait, what do you mean you don't want me to have a seating chart? And I can, you know, walk them through that process. So any schools or districts out there, you know, who pick up, you know, 20 or so books and you know, want a little free PD, just look me up.
That's awesome. And Better Leaders, thank you for investing in yourself today by listening to this podcast. Remember, life is 10% of what happens to you and 90% of how you react to it. Go out there today and be a better leader. Today's podcast was brought to you by Danny and Mike. Head over to betterleadersbetterschools.com and type Mike in the search bar. The show notes page will pop up. You'll get the highlights of today's episode, links to all the resources, and the best way to connect. Mike, thanks again for sharing your leadership insights and helping the better leaders be better. Better leaders, just a few more things before you take off. If you enjoyed today's episode, make sure you subscribe, rate, and review the show. This helps gives the show some social proof, aka iTunes juice, and encourages new people to listen to the show. If you are a social media junkie, share your biggest takeaway from the show, and feel free to tag me on Twitter or Instagram. My handle is Alien Earbud, an anagram for my name, Daniel Bauer. Take the letters, switch them around, and create something interesting and new. That's how I got it. This Sunday is the weekend resource. Do you want to get a short email from me every Sunday where I share the best resources I have come across, links to interesting articles, books, blogs, and podcasts that have challenged my thinking, and a quote that's inspired me and will inspire you as well? If you'd like access to this resource, head over to betterleadersbetterschools.com and join the newsletter at the top of the page. Over 1,000 school leaders subscribe, and I think you'll benefit from it too. In the newsletter, I also share when a new blog or podcast comes out, as well as different opportunities to work with me. Thanks again for listening to the show.